Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be.
Well, good evening and happy Shabbat to one and all. Welcome to Yada Yada Radio. Looks like we have both JB and I know we have Kirk here because we've been chatting at the pre-show hour. It was an interesting week this week. A few things I would like to share. One is that, of course, there was the big blast in Beirut, Lebanon. And the blast was comprised of, and it took down, not only that took out the harbor, but took out every building really in proximity. And the blast was likely just an accident as a fire started, and they had these enormous amounts of ammonia nitrate. The fact that they had ammonia nitrate is interesting. The fact that they had this huge supply of it 10 years after the Russian ship unloaded it is exceedingly telling. Do you know what ammonium nitrate is used for?
Bomb.
Well,
I guess
Muslims. Muslims like to use it for bombs. That is correct. What is its primary purpose? The companies that manufacture it, when Russia made it, they weren't making it for Muslims to blow up the World Trade Center or Muslim-inspired idiots like Timothy McVeigh to blow up the Oklahoma federal building. Fertilizer.
Oh, is it fertilizer? Okay.
So if the Russians brought a shipload of ammonium nitrate to Beirut, and they had these giant silos that it was being stored in, and it was still there, that tells you two things about Lebanon, doesn't it? One is, obviously, no one is farming. So when it comes to actually being productive and working the land,
not so much.
Yeah. Not so much. And second, without the Marines being there and a Marine base to blow up, the Muslims haven't been really very active at large explosions.
This is so sad.
So I guess that's the story. I shouldn't be laughing about several hundred people.
But
you know, the fact is, the world is so upside down. You've got to see the lighter side of everything, or you would go crazy,
go nuts, go insane.
You sure would. Last week, I shared something that I want to reinforce because I think it is essential for the family to understand. Black Lives Matter, and today I received evidence that not all Black Lives Matter. I was in a checkout line the second time through at a Home Depot, this time with nothing but plants, and I met the nastiest, most vulgar African-American woman, black woman, that you could possibly meet. She had the vocabulary of a teenage ex-con. She had the manners of a rattlesnake. She was just vulgar. If she had an IQ of 12, I think that's spotting her 10 points. A woman was stupid, belligerent, arrogant, racist, just all things miserable. And I really have devoted my life to trying to reach out to and do everything I can to help anyone who is disadvantaged and to try to, as a Caucasian, show great care and concern for anyone of an ethnicity other than my own. And I, you know, if you were with me, you would be surprised as to how far I go out of my way and how consistently I'll do it and how much I will invest in people of different ethnicities to lift them up and to try to narrow the perceived gap. And what I find is that that there are a lot of good people, and most of the people that I encounter will respond in kind. But there is a growing percentage of young black men and women that are way beyond hope. They're angry. They're racist. They're wholly unproductive. They have no character. They have no conscience. They're just liberal idiots, foul-mouthed liberal idiots. And what we're finding with Black Lives Matter is that Black Lives Matter, the people who are involved in it, are racist. Their principal goal is communist revolution. That is their primary goal. It's been their primary goal from the beginning. Secondary goal is anything they can do that is disruptive of and hateful to Israel. Their third goal is total anarchy, because anarchy is what leads, creates the opportunity for revolution. But they are racist. There is a hatred among those in the African American culture, not all, but a very significant percentage, against Hispanics, against Asians, and against Caucasians. There is very little racism and no institutionalized racism from whites towards blacks. The percentage of whites that are racist, well, at least prior to Black Lives Matter and these protests, is exceedingly small. But they're manufacturing racists based on their behavior, based upon their words. Like this woman. She pushed every button that you could possibly push to say, you know, there's something seriously wrong with you. Now, and she felt empowered because, you know, there were more of her than there was of me. So she felt absolutely empowered. And there isn't a single person that stood up to shut her down. It speaks volumes of the people. But Black Lives Matter is a racist organization. Even the Caucasians that are involved in it are self-loathing. They and those that women hate men, it's sexist, and particularly Caucasian men. And the men that do it are emasculated. They've been so twisted by political correctness. They wouldn't know what sex they are if they looked in their underpants. So it is, it's a really, really mixed up situation. And I know there are some good people that are sponsors of it. You know, that as an athlete, I happen to like LeBron James, and he's wearing Black Lives Matter shirts. And there are people who are decent human beings who are mixed up in it. And they may be mixed up in it for because it's politically correct to pretend that they have an argument. But this is what I said last week, and I want to reinforce this. Black Lives Matter is a conspiracy. And it's no different than every conspiracy. Those who promote conspiracies all have miserable lives. They're unhappy with their lives. And that's ubiquitous among those who are protesting Black Lives Matter. They all have miserable, unfulfilling lives. And without exception in conspiracy, the reason people believe in conspiracy is they want to blame others for their miserable lives as opposed to taking personal responsibility. Well, that is the very definition and the essence of Black Lives Matter. It's somebody else's fault that I'm in this miserable life. It's somebody else's fault that George Floyd is dead. No, it's George Floyd's fault that he's dead. He was a druggie all of his life. Cocaine, fentanyl, heroin. He was probably the worst kind of thief, breaking into the home of a woman, not only holding a gun to her stomach and demanding all of her goods, but going in with eight fellow goons and pistol whipping her. This is not a good man, and you're trying to take this man and his death, which he caused. And we need to recognize that. Had he not been hyped up on methamphetamines and on fentanyl, had he not destroyed his respiratory system and his heart by 20 years of drug use, had he not driven under the influence, had he not stolen the cigarettes, had he not passed a counterfeit bill, because his whole life was a story of thievery to support his drug habit. Had he not resisted arrest, had he not had COVID and was not paying any attention to any of the appropriate behaviors with COVID, like to stay home as opposed to go out and expose other people to it. So he walked into that store without a mask, and he had COVID, and he knew it.
Mm.
He didn't tell anybody that, and here he is, he's infecting other people with COVID. You put it all together, and he was a walking time bomb. And so he died because of the choices he made, almost all of which were bad. To take an individual like this and lionize them as if they're some kind of saint or hero is absolutely wrong. And then to extrapolate from that, that police are racist when they are not. A very small percentage of police are racist. It's one of the least racist organizations in the world, U.S. police. But to pretend that police violence is based on racism is utter nonsense. Police violence exists. The police are way too aggressive. That's absolutely true. It has nothing to do with racism. You're absolutely ruining the argument when you claim that it's a racial argument as opposed to the militarization issue and an attitude issue in America.
Yeah.
And so it is, the whole thing is a complete farce. You know, to suggest that police are hunting down and trying to attack and kill blacks, or that whites are out killing blacks, is absolutely stupid. And it's fanciful. You know, 90% of the time, over 90% of the time, that a black man or woman is killed is by another black man or woman. They only represent 13% of the population. Think of that. Stop pointing the finger. Stop blaming someone else. The problem is in your culture, in your homes, the way you're not raising children. So your lives are miserable. And as every conspiracy, when you have a miserable life and you don't want to take responsibility, you're out blaming someone else. And you're blaming the Jews. You're blaming Caucasian men. And then you're saying you built the damn country that you did build. There's not a single one of those people that built America. And even if you go back nearly 200 years, their ancestors aren't building America. It's a complete myth. If you can't tell the truth to support your argument, you don't have an argument.
You don't have an argument.
Stop making it. You didn't build America. And this idea you weren't compensated, I'll tell you what, that's utter nonsense. African Americans are four times more likely to take welfare, food stamps, and other forms of government support. The Great Society has transferred trillions of dollars into the community. What has it done? It's made situation worse because it's destroyed character and it's destroyed ambition, drive, a sense of responsibility, an appreciation for the value of work. Fathers, thinking that it's a prize to see how many women you can knock up and how many children you can conceive and not take care of any of them. You know, be a sperm donor, but never a parent. Now, it's not ubiquitous. There are some blacks, I don't know what term we're going to use here, skin color says that they would refer to themselves as black, that I'm very close friends with. Most of my friends on this island, I would say, would be black. And they do a marvelous job with their family. They work hard, have a sense of value. They're articulate. They're disgusted by what they're witnessing. But they're afraid to say it because the community will not allow them to speak out honestly about it. Yeah. And so what we have is a conspiracy theory. We have a group of people who have miserable lives, and they want to blame everybody at themselves, and that includes the Caucasian liberals that are marching with them, who were sponsors of and the great advocates of taking money away from those who are productive and giving it to those who are unproductive, and it didn't work. So rather than admit failure, what they want is more socialism, more communism. And what they don't recognize in their communism and their socialism, Marx was a racist. Karl Marx used the N-word. He spoke of blacks derogatorily, to the point of animals, was his assessment. He was like Abraham Lincoln. Yeah, so did Lincoln. Yeah, I know. It's so astonishing how we just don't get it. And, you know, you look at the number one communist government in the world, it's the Chinese. Look what they're doing to the Uyghurs. You know that ethnically the Uyghurs are a very high percentage of J1. They're Jewish. Religiously, they're Muslims. But they're different than the Chinese. And the Chinese have millions of them in the most horrific internment camps. It is the most disgusting government, not only in the world today, but in hundreds and hundreds of years. It's the government that gave us COVID and then covered it up so that so many people could die. So it's what you have is a bunch of thoughtless people who have been indoctrinated, who have unfulfilling and miserable lives, trying to blame others for their problems. And as is the case with almost everyone who is conspiratorial, it's ultimately blame the Jews. One thing I want to say is I've done a fair amount of research on COVID since our last meeting. And what I want to share is some things that are not going to be very popular, but they are nonetheless true. We now know that somewhere between 10 and 15 times the number of people that have tested positive for COVID actually have been infected with COVID. The majority of people that get it, some 80%, are asymptomatic. So they aren't, because they don't even know they have it. And of the 20% who get symptoms, about 80% of those have very mild symptoms, and most people with mild symptoms aren't getting tested either. So you can multiply the number that a nation like the United States, who you know is done more testing probably than any other nation, by 10 to 15 times to have the actual number that are infected. Well, that's important.
So it was about 4 million last week. I think it was about 4.5 million.
Multiply that by 10 to 15. That means 40 to 65 million Americans have actually contracted the disease. The second thing is on mortality. The flu is between 0.1% and 0.2% lethal. COVID is 0.5%, half of 1%. So it's somewhere around three to five times more lethal than the flu. But it isn't pandemic lethality at half of 1%. That's the most. It could be a little less than that. So that's a really interesting number. The other thing that we just don't want to talk about with COVID, because people think that it doesn't matter how much you pay to prolong a life, that life is something that you prolong regardless of cost, because they have no understanding of economics and what can and should be done with money. The reality is that 89.3% of those who are hospitalized with COVID, 89.3% of those who are hospitalized with COVID are seriously ill with heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, pulmonary issues. They're very sick individuals. They're individuals whose lifespan is going to be truncated, whether they would, without COVID, have survived 6 months, a year, 2 years, or 3 years before these other illnesses took their lives. That's where most people who are hospitalized with COVID are. And so when we say that we've had 150,000, 160,000 Americans die of COVID, well, COVID was a contributor to the deaths of people who died from heart disease and high blood pressure and diabetes and other ailments that COVID contributed. Well, it's just the reality. You may not want to hear it, but that's the reality. Now, a couple of other notes on COVID. As I said, the very moment that it began to occur, the worldwide and in the United States, governments' reactions to COVID were far more sinister, far more deadly, far more destructive than the disease could ever have been. We destroyed our currencies. We destroyed our economies. Destroyed them. The world will never be the same. And we destroyed character because we found out, the most liberal leaders found out, that you can use fear to cause people to give up their freedoms without a fight. And when you're in that position, you're only a matter of one good Adolf Hitler, Vladimir Lenin, Stalin, Joseph Stalin, Mao Zedong away from a ruthless control of the world where millions and billions die. That's what COVID told us, that one of those individuals spellbinding the world with fear porn, as we had with COVID, is enough to get everyone to capitulate. The other thing I'd like to say about COVID is that it's going to be with us until 2033. It's not going away. It's way too effective at its disbursement. It's everywhere around the world, and we're already in a situation where some 80% of Muslims are conspiratorialists. They're not going to take the vaccine. Some 70% of Russians are into conspiracies. They're not going to take the vaccine. It's about 40 to 50% of Americans, and it's a growing number now because of Black Lives Matter on the liberal side. But also you have the 40% of Trump supporters that are highly conspiratorial, and one of the primary conspiracies of the conspiratorial is vaccines. You're going to have at least 40% of Americans that will refuse to be vaccinated. And at that number, there is a 0% chance that the vaccine is going to stop the spread of the disease. So It's all over the world. People will continue to be infected. We have no idea how long the antibodies last. Even if they were to last 2 years, this disease is going to be, virus is going to be taking people's lives all the way through 2033. So if you're waiting for what happens when we get over the disease, we'll never get over it. So on that happy note, that now that you know we have destroyed our currency, we've destroyed our economy, that the disease is never going away, and that your government has put you in a position where we're just one damn good speech away from world domination, and most people capitulating. And that the most popular uprising in the world, those who are now revolutionaries, Black Lives Matter, is not only conspiratorial, but anti-Jewish. We're in a hell of a spot. You know, I don't think the world has ever been in a worse spot. And one of the things that really bothers me about it, I said that wasn't going to be my last thing. I have one more. The world is a pretty hellish place. You know, life in China essentially isn't worth living. The freedoms are nil. The government is horrific. People that that rebel against this horrific government are put in detention camps and tortured, never to be seen again. It is horrific. Life in India, for most people, isn't worth living because of their caste system. Most of the countries of Africa are life isn't worth living. It's either they have no food, they have no water.
No water.
They're fighting each other, Zimbabwe, the Sudan, and killing one another. They're like Egypt, where the Muslims are ruthless and the cops are prey. They're like Turkey with the Kurds. They're like most of the Muslim world, where you have no freedom, and where 1.5 billion Muslims, half of whom are women, are treated like absolute garbage, where women are property to be raped. The world's a mess, and I don't want to pretend that the United States is noble or has great character or anything else, but I'm here to tell you that to be protesting against the United States and say we're not going to teach American history anymore, that we're going to say that America has institutional racism, that America has to be torn down, is so naive for the rest of the world. We live in a world where things are hellacious. That look at North Korea, the most communist of all nations. And it is astonishing that young and well-educated people are gravitating to this mythology, ignorant of the fact that all you have to do is compare America to these other places, and you wouldn't be marching. You'd be protesting life under Islam. You'd be protesting life under communism. You'd be protesting life under Hinduism. You wouldn't be protesting against Jews or Americans or, for a matter, Caucasians. All right, so much for the assessment of the world, but more than ever,
no,
we need to do this, because God is begging his children to come home, begging them. And you need to realize that the world isn't what you thought it was. You need to realize that you are, if you are Jewish in particular, consider yourself as one of those who were in Germany in the 1920s. That is where you are relative to the rest of the world. If in the 1920s you saw the world as we are correctly presenting it now, and you fled. You and your family were spared. Life was not easy, but you were spared. That is the same call that is going out to you now. All right, Yahshua 4:2. Yahweh and Yahshua 4:1 concluded the third his statements in what's called now the third chapter of Yahshua, where he was overtly condemning religiousness. So we have to recognize that all of those Jews that play religious dress-up, God despises. God sees Jewish religious dress-up as disgusting. I think he views it as far more disgusting than he views an Islamic woman wearing a hijab or a veil. And those things, I'm sure.
Which book and chapter are we on?
We are on 3:3, Observations, Volume 3, Chapter 3, and it's Yahshua Chapter 4. And so in the third chapter, as we come into this, because everything that Yahweh talks about is contextual, he is just lambasted his disgust for religious dress-up. And he's talking to his own people. The religious dress-up, he's not talking to Muslims. Muslims wouldn't play religious dress-up. It's actually religious dress-down, let's be honest. This was 700 BCE, Muhammad enforced religious dress-down around 700 CE, 1,400 years. So they're not talking about Islam. He's not talking about Hinduism. He's talking about his own people. And this realization that most Jews were pagans is something that is sad but true. Most Jews were pagans. I think it was Mike that sent me the most recent dig in Jerusalem. Under this huge rock pile, they found what is one of the largest government complexes dating to the time. I think this one dates back from somewhere between 700 and 900 BCE, maybe even the layers that go back beyond that to the time of Dode David. And almost everything in there is marked belongs to the king. Belongs to the king. People were taxed. Belongs to the king. And what many of the people paid their taxes with to the king was idols. It's this huge reservoir of idols. And idols were considered something valuable, which tells you that preponderance of Jews were pagans. You know, what did Hezekiah have to do before he could even petition Yahweh for the opportunity to celebrate Pesach belatedly?
And to clean up the temple, throw everything
right
out.
Well, not just the temple. Idols from
everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yeah,
idols from everywhere.
The garbage dump was overrun with them, yes.
Right. Yeah, so were the king's own treasury.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what God has been assailing. And so now what he is saying is there's going to be a new day. He says, you know, I'm not going to live in this squalor, and I'm coming back. I created this universe. I'm going to restore it, and I'm going to restore my relationship with my people, and we're not going to live in this squalor. So he says, in this day, which is his day, Bahayom Hahu, living vegetation will sprout and thrive, branching out and growing. Shemak. Or we could just say, in his day, the branch. There will be the branch. The branch, of course, is Dode. The branch is this central branch off the tree of lives that is rooted in Jerusalem, Yehuda, Yisrael, that we thrive upon, that we grow upon, that we're rooted and grafted into. In this day, which is his day, the branch for the benefit of Yahweh. Or you can say, in this day, which is his day, living vegetation will sprout and thrive, branching out and growing. For Yahweh. Well, what that tells you is that the branch is going to return for Yahweh. That's dope. That can also tell you that God's not going to live in the polluted squalor that we've created. You know, we've polluted our seas. We've polluted our rivers. We've polluted our minds. We've polluted our air. God's not going to live in pollution. Vegetation is going to thrive and grow. We're not going to be burning down the rainforest. It shall be, accordingly, beautiful and splendorous, spread out in an attractive and desirable manner, reaching out in a valuable and honorable way. Well, that would also apply to the Shemach as the branch, too. David. Mm-hmm. David will exist accordingly. Beautiful and splendorous. He's, as I've said in the, when we began Coming Home, the series of books following this, observations, that God says, you know, he's going to be as God. He's going to be as brilliant as the sun. And by the way, if he is as God and he is as brilliant as the sun, as the living embodiment of the covenant, guess what? All of us who are part of the covenant will be as brilliant as the sun and be as if God. So it shall be, accordingly, beautiful and splendorous, speaking of the branch. Then he will approach as a glorious manifestation, along with the majestic and eminently wonderful fruitful offspring of the land. I can't tell you if he is a capital H or a lowercase h, because the fact of the matter is, both of them are coming. He, Dod, he, Yahweh. It's a glorious manifestation.
Like, if they're like each other in the same amount of light, then they're both a capital.
Right. Right. I mean, in this case, Dod is being magnified, so his light is, and energy is almost infinitely brilliant, and Yahweh cannot even among his children here on earth be all of Yahweh. He's just a vastly diminished aspect of himself that will still be available for us to see, but it's going to be energy-based, so it's a lot more than we've ever been able to see of Yahweh, apart from his words, which we see him very clearly. But the two are approaching, and they're approaching together. They're drawing near as an abundantly significant, dignified, and rewarding presence, along with the majestic and eminently wonderful offspring of the land. Yeah, this does not say, Perry, that there's going to be an enormous number of Jews. It most certainly doesn't say, hey, you know, there's 2.5 billion Christians out there. We're going to have 2.5 billion people celebrating. No, it doesn't. It just says that those who are going to celebrate this day will be fruitful offspring, Perry. As a matter of fact, the next line says they're going to be few. But that's not what matters. It's not the number, the quantity, it's the quality. These people are going to be, these souls are going to be glorious. They're going to be extraordinary. They're going to be eminently wonderful. They're going to be impressive and lofty and excellent and exalted. Ga'ah, rising up, lifted up, growing up. Offspring of the seed of Dod. So the quality is going to be extraordinary because these are all Yahweh's children. Goes on to say, the remnant of survivors of Yisrael and Yehuda will also be attractive and shining in appearance. Why is God so excited about this day? Well, first of all, he's restoring the earth to the conditions in the Garden of Eden. And I want to tell you, he loved the beauty of Eden. He loves life. He thinks trees and grass and streams and lakes and waterfalls and flowers birds. And yes, people are beautiful. It's a day of celebrating life for Yahweh, along with his most beautiful creation, his son. Both appearing gloriously, majestically, eminently wonderful, along with his fruitful offspring of the land. Yes, it's a remnant of survivors, but it's a remnant of Yisrael and Yahudah, which means God is honoring his promise to his people. He is honoring his promise to Abraham. It means that the entire basis of Christianity was a fraud. The church didn't replace Jews. God has said as clearly as words allow, on this day, which is spectacularly beautiful, that I'm returning to celebrate life with the restored and eminently wonderful survivors of Yisrael and Yahudah, who will at this day be attractive and shining in appearance. The antithesis of the Christian New Testament claims. It also happens to be the antithesis of what is celebrated in Rabbinic Judaism. And of course, it's the antithesis of what is claimed in Islam. It would be the antithesis of what is claimed by Black Lives Matter. Yahweh's coming back not because Black Lives Matter. He isn't coming back for Christians or Muslims. To the contrary, they will be eliminated from the earth. He's coming back, and he isn't going to be a passive party. You're going to see God is God. The earth is going to be restored. We're returning to Eden. Symmetry, my friends. I'm stammering here, my Moses moment. Because long ago, something dawned on me with the Moed Mikre, that we walk through this doorway of Pesach, and then we're perfected by matzah, which means we get the religion and politics out of us, so that we're adopted into Yahweh's family on Bukurim, enriched and empowered by our Heavenly Father on Shabuah, so that as part of his family, we're encouraged to speak out against man's schemes on Teruah and to share the path to God, such that God is doing precisely what he's promising here, reconciling his relationship with his people, Yisrael and Yahudah, on the day of reconciliations, so that he can return us all to Eden, Sukkah. That was the last time God camped out with us. Yes, he led people through the wilderness. But in terms of camping out with Sukkah, the story of Eden is told because that is where we are returning. This time, Eden's just going to be a little larger. Be the size of the earth and maybe even beyond. And it's going to be beautiful as it was before. But what God is saying is that in Eden, the vegetation was lush. The animals were beautiful. The quality time camping out together with Adam and then with Adam and Chawo was marvelous. And that's where God is returning. If you like the idea of what occurred in Eden, no religion, no politics, no military, no police.
Sign me
but
up.
Instead, yeah. if you like family, if you like that kind of thing, you're going to love it. But God's really clear. I'm taking you back. Symmetry. From God's perspective, nothing has changed. Our past in Eden will be the same as our future during the Shabbat celebration of Sukkot. Yahweh's word remains consistent. God will be surrounded by what he perceives as beautiful. And when beauty is analyzed, the more symmetry, the more attractive someone or something is perceived. Balance is often the is often essential to being fair, as well as to living both a productive and enjoyable life. I love translating. I do it every day. I love deducing insights from Yahweh's testimony. In fact, Kirk, I think it's probably okay for me to share that you today read this chapter aloud to Terry.
Yesterday,
and
yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yesterday. And her comment at the end of it, it says, you know, he's obviously inspired by Yahweh. Otherwise, it would be impossible to get this many wonderful insights out of his word. And I think it's true. I mean, we know it's true because that's what it says in Yahseiah 11. And what I think it's important for folks to recognize that is not a way of gloating or bragging. It's exactly the opposite. It's to say, you know, it's amazing what God can accomplish.
He can work with anybody.
If we're only willing to get out of the way. It's the Moshe story all over again.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually translating again what Moshe said when Yahweh asked him to go back into Egypt. And it was, you know, not me.
No.
It was absolutely senseless. That gives you Moshe apart from Yahweh. And then with Yahweh, read what Moshe said in Devarim.
Yeah, it's brilliant. On a roll there.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's just the difference between somebody who is inspired by
with
Yahweh.
With Yahweh, without Yahweh.
You know, God said, I mean, he had some slips of the tongue. But look what he wrote when he was inspired by Yahweh. And so it is something we all ought to celebrate. It's just another affirmation of how desirous God is of having us understand, and then when we understand, sharing it. Now, in this light, splendor is a manifestation of order. Ugliness is a product of disorder. The former is a product of light's eternal nature, while the latter is a reflection of the loss of order through the thermodynamic effects of aging in the material realm. Ugliness is brought to bear by the corruptive nature of sin. Beauty is a reflection of Yahweh's perfect light. And all of this was said in the context of this marvelous use of Shemot, which is a word that we're going to chase down until we really understand how God is using it. Because the world became preoccupied with the concept of Messiah. You know, that's Jesus Christ. He is the Christ. He is the Messiah. He wasn't the Messiah.
No.
He wasn't the Christ. He most certainly wasn't Jesus Christ. He never referred to himself as such. Did he say, you can call me Mr. Christ. That's my name, Mr. Christ. No. The whole thing is just ludicrous. And so the world's been fixated on that title. It's a title that Yahweh afforded to Dode, gave to Dode several times. And what I say about Dode isn't true. You can call me a liar. I don't think God's a liar. And I don't think it would be a good idea to call him one. Personal advice. Do what you wish. But the point is that Branch Shemach, well, it's a far more prevalent title than is Messiah. Yeah. A bunch of times say that Dode, he is my Messiah. He is my anointed Messiah. But he uses Shemach as a title far more often. So there's something about that title that resonates more dearly with Yahweh and is more important for us to understand. And I think it takes us right back to Eden. What was in the center of that garden? The tree of
life.
And the tree of the knowledge of that which is productive and counterproductive. And by the way, this idea that the tree that was productive and counterproductive, good and evil, And people say, oh, bad tree. Don't do that. The fact of the matter is, it's hugely advantageous today. It put Adam and Chow up before they ate of it in a position where all they knew was that which was wonderful, and they had this great relationship with God. But they had to have the opportunity to say, nah, you know, I want to go off and consider other options.
Do my thing.
And, right. So that's why it existed. But the fact of the matter is that so long as they're the tree of lives, then the knowledge of good and evil, if you use it effectively, is a very good thing. We need to do what we did at the beginning of this program, to expose and condemn man's stupidity, because it always leads people away from God. At the same time, we should celebrate that which is good, the testimony of Yahweh. So those trees had branches, and the central branch of the tree of lives is Dode. Why? Because his words are the seeds of life. He sowed the seeds of life. He's grafted into Zion, on Moriah, in Yehuda, in Yisrael. He was grafted into the Torah. His fruit is the children of the covenant. As we move to our next statement, it's then it will come to pass that he who remains in Zion, along with the remnant spared in Jerusalem, will be called set apart. For all who approach him will be written and described in the book of lives. And Jerusalem, the source from which guidance and teaching regarding reconciliation flow. I like being right. I know, JB, you're really prone to saying you hate being wrong, you like being right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like being right. It's not gloating. It's just that the thing we should be striving for is to be right. That's the most important mm-hmm. thing when it comes to God. So he constantly is saying that Dode was Tzedak right. So it's good to be right. What am I talking about here? What I said is that Shamak, this incredibly important title about branch, being grafted into the Torah, being grafted into the land, being grafted into Zion, that's the signpost along the way, representing Dode, representing the tree of lives, growing out of where? We're talking about in this statement the tree of lives growing out of Eden, correct?
Right.
Then it will come to pass that those who remain in Zion, along with those who are spared within Jerusalem, shall be called set apart. For all who approach him shall be written and inscribed in the book of lives in Jerusalem. So the tree of lives found in the center of Eden. That's where we are returning. That's what this is all about. The few that are spared, maybe it's one in a million. Maybe it's slightly more than that at that time. But the few that are spared in Zion, not in Mecca, not in the Vatican, not in New York, not in Washington, D.C., not in the People's Republic of California, well, certainly not in China. Those who are spared in Zion. Now, to be in Zion, you need to understand what Zion means. It means signs posted along the way. Well, the way was between Dode's house and Yahweh's house on the ridgeline of Moriah. Yahweh was a Zionist. God is a Zionist. Then it will come to pass that he who remains in Zion, along with the remnant spirit in Jerusalem. Now, why is that important? What do we begin this program by doing? Telling you that if you are Jewish, you need to look at the world the way that you would have hoped your fellow Jews would have looked at Europe in the 1920s and gotten out. That is where we are now. And you need to get out. Those who are being spared, they're not being spared in New Jersey or Arizona. They're being spared in Jerusalem. They're being spared on Zion. You need to come home to be spared. Now, whether you want to look at coming home symbolically, metaphorically, as coming home to the covenant, or coming home to Yisrael, to the land of promise, quite honestly, of course, coming home to the covenant is the more important of the two.
Quicker, better.
But I think in this case, God is encouraging both. Please, he's encouraging both. Along with those spared in Jerusalem will be called set apart. He didn't say they'd be called rabbinic, did he? He didn't say they will be called religious, did he?
No,
he didn't say they would be called anything other than set apart. Kodesh. There is, maybe 10 words in Hebrew that are vitally important for us to stand. Set apart, Kodesh is one of those 10. Yisrael is set apart. Yahweh is set apart. His name is set apart. The Torah is set apart. His Moed Mikre each day is set apart. Covenant is set apart. Everything that's important to Yahweh, including the seventh day, is set apart. Why are those things set apart? What are they set apart from? What does it mean to be set apart? It means that which is common, Common? What could be more common than religion? What could be more common than politics? What could be more common than culture? I talked about Black Lives Matter. It has nothing to do with ethnicity. The very fact that people are making it about race is completely wrong. There is nothing that matters. Nothing. With exception of the ethnicity of Jews, apart from the ethnicity of Jews from Yahweh's point of view, nothing matters as it relates to our skin color. It is an absolute meaningless benchmark. It's culture. God didn't tell Abraham to walk away from his race, did he? He said to walk away from your culture. Walk away from your father's house, the family of man. Walk away from your country, which is Babylon. Not from your ethnicity. Ethnicity is meaningless. And so the people are being called set apart. Set apart from religion. Set apart from politics. Set apart from the conspiracies. Set apart from protesting Black Lives Matter. Set apart from protesting that MAGA, Make America Great Again. Set apart from the fear of COVID, set apart from communism where men impose subjugation against other men and women. That's what he's set apart from. It's set apart from that which is common to that which is uncommon to Yahweh. They will be called set apart from the world. Yisrael will be set apart. Yahudah. Set apart, special rather than common. God's not trying to save everybody. It's the opposite. It's a remnant of people, and that remnant is called by one distinction, special, no longer ordinary, uncommon, unique, set apart and distinct. Isn't that amazing? That with all of the religions claiming that they are providing the path to God. The one thing God says is that those who are part of this celebration when I return, they're not part of any of it. In fact, they're disassociated, set apart from it. Think how important that is. That the very Spirit that has played such an essential role in helping with these translations and providing these insights, the Spirit is actually called the Ruach Kodesh, set apart Spirit. Set apart. Not part of. If you were a Roman Catholic, you would think that you're going to be saved because you're part of the church. And God is saying just the opposite. You have to be set apart from it. People think that they're going to be saved because they're save the world by marching with environmentalists or belonging associated with protests like Black Lives Matter. No, God is saying, if that is what matters to you, you do not matter to me. You need to be set apart. Written and ascribed in a book of lives. You know, Yahweh wrote the Torah down, didn't he? What good would prophecy have been? We're sitting here reading Yashaya. What good would prophecy have been if it wasn't written?
None, because she would have just
none.
Could be
the answer
incorrect.
Is none. It wouldn't have been worth anything. The Torah wouldn't have been worth anything, because look what happened with the claims of the Talmud, which claims to be handed down at the same time. And it's just a bunch of irritating, self-aggrandizing arguments. The Torah has meaning because it was written down, written in stone. And these prophecies have merit because they were written down. What did Yahweh tell? Grab for yourself a very large parchment scroll and write these words down using the alphabet. Write it down. Our names will be written in a book of lives. Not verbally stated in a book of lives. It's not God say, hey, welcome, James, welcome, Kirk, you know, glad to have you here. What was your name, fella? I don't know. You use too many different names. I don't know you. Oh, maybe I know you, but I've forgotten your name. No, God's saying your name is written in the book of life. And by the way, what that also means is that names are attached to our souls. We're going to go into Shamaim with a name. Now, it doesn't say that it is most certainly our earthly name. We may choose a new name. You know, I gave the love of my life a jump start on it. And early in our relationship, I said, you know, I don't think you're pleased with many things that have happened in your life over the last 15 or 20 years. It's been a lot of pain and suffering. Why don't we just have a fresh start with a new name? It's kind of like when I started writing these series of books. I said, what about a new name? Yada will work out fine. Glad I picked that name, because that's
amazingly,
the
name. Isn't it?
Yeah, and all of those prophecies. So, turned out okay. That was a good name to pick. Or maybe I had nothing to do with picking it at all.
Maybe not.
Yeah, all written in the book of lives, written down. Whereupon, meeting these conditions, the upright one of mine wash away the excrement and filth of the daughters of Zion, and by association purge and rinse away the blood of Jerusalem from her midst. By way of the Spirit of good judgment regarding the means to resolve disputes, and by the Spirit of blowing rage. Okay, well, that's not what this is. Yeshayah 4:4. Some of this is not what you would expect, right? Were you expecting that would be the next transition? So we begin with, whereupon meeting these conditions, because when decisions are predicated upon this. M, terms and conditions. So you don't get to be called set apart unless you read those signs posted along the way. And that the written word of Yahweh meant enough to you that you responded favorably to it and you came home. You've come to understand that there were five requirements of the covenant, things that God expects of us if we want to be part of his family, and you accepted them. So whereupon meeting these conditions, the upright one of mine, this is Yeshayah speaking, the upright pillar of the tent of the witness of mine, he's going to wash away the excrement and filth. That's what has to happen. God can't recreate the conditions of Eden unless he eliminates all traces of human corruption. And Yahshua is calling the filth that Yahweh is washing away excrement, feces, dung. God looks at religious men, political men and women, but the people out there marching and their little slogans. He says, from my point of view, you're dung. I'll tell you, this woman that I met at encountered at Home Depot, she's dung. It's the way she acted, the vocabulary, her whole attitude, was filth. And the more she screamed, the more obvious it was. God's wiping away, washing away the excrement and filth. And this is interesting. It's the daughters of Zion. You know, it's the daughters of Yisrael, the daughters of the land, the daughters of Jerusalem, the daughters here of Zion. I don't know, quite frankly, why he would choose the daughters versus the sons. You know, most of the time Yahweh speaks Hebrew is a masculine-dominated language. There's a lot of marvelous feminine concepts like name Yahweh, and the set-apart spirit, of course, Torah and covenant are all feminine. But
all feminine, yeah.
Yeah. It's still, it mostly addresses men. You know, we see a lot more Ben than Bath, sons rather than daughters. But this time, it's clearly daughters. Bath. Of Zion, the mothers of Zion, the daughters of Zion, those who have been born along this way, and he's cleaning, restoring, cleansing the women. And
is it because there's so many of them, there's going to be so many women left compared to the men after that, all the battle and the war?
There are going to be.
Fair enough.
It's true.
Fair enough.
I think that we are going to find that at least in the end, will be more women than men. Now, that does not necessarily mean there'll be more women than men and Shamaim are told one versus the other, and I don't even sure it matters. I would assume there'll be a lot of men who are part of the covenant who are killed, during the time of Jacob's troubles. We have to be really careful that we never fall into the trap that torments Christians, torments Muslims, where they assume that if you get a terminal disease that either God is not willing to cure you, or that he gave you this disease for some reason to test you, or that they say, God just must have wanted Sally Q in heaven to be with him. And it's utter nonsense. So they're begging God to save them, and when their God doesn't save them, they say, God must have wanted him or her to be up there in heaven. utter nonsense. God is not in the business of restoring bodies. That would be stupid. Absolute and complete waste of his time and our time and everybody's time. Our bodies are these very temporary homes for our souls. He's in the business of restoring souls because a soul can not only be forever, but a soul can be adopted into his family, enriched and empowered in ways that are impossible with a physical body. A physical body is nothing but limitations. Enveloped with the spirit is nothing but possibilities.
Right.
They're profoundly different. So God is not in the business of trying to restore bodies, but instead souls. So there are going to be a lot of covenant members who are going to succumb during the these final years. So could that be the reason that, okay, now you got just a lot of women here, and so he's cleansing them? Could it be that Yahweh is trying to emphasize the birth of his family, and that the daughters of Zion are the mothers, and he's this is a time where the thing that matters most is those who are adopted and born naturally into his covenant family, and that is a natural process of women, and it's, if we're going to say that the seed which bears this fruit that begins this gestation that conceives it are the words of Dod. And then the women provide the womb, which provides the new life. It's even, you go back to the first woman, where we've talked a lot about Eden. Her name was Chawa, lives, mm-hmm. To give life. So he is cleansing the daughters of Zion. And by association, he's purging and rinsing away the blood of Jerusalem.
Maybe it's the menstrual cycle.
Right.
Symbol.
Could be, and being pure.
Because that's the same as,
mm-hmm.
That's the same as excrement. It's also one of the meanings of excrement.
Could be.
So
it also could be that man, religious man, you look at conspiratorial man, political man, religious man, academic man. He is astonishingly anti-Israel. And, of course, so are Muslims. So have been Christians over the centuries. And so, we are going to witness terrible carnage. Israel, and particularly Jerusalem, is going to be stained with blood. Sidewalks of Jerusalem will be stained in blood, and God's going to clean that away. There'll be no more dying, no more killing his people. And even when a Jew is defended by killing an Islamic terrorist that is trying to wipe them out, no one wants to see the blood spill, and God's going to clean it all away from her midst. Now it says here by two ways, by the spirit, the ruach of good judgment, the ruach mishpat. Mishpat is one of those terms. It's like mikra. And almost, I don't know how many terms it must be like this, but we came upon this a long time ago. But all of these terms, mishpat and mikra, are great examples. The ma,
the question
part of the compound, yes, is an interrogatory. It means to ponder the who, what, why, where, and when, or something. It's to inquire about, to be inquisitive, to search for answers, to ask good questions about whatever the word is that follows. So it's to ponder the invitations to meet with God. In this case, the mishpat is to ponder and inquire about exercising good judgment, shafat, making good decisions, the means to resolve disputes. So that the spirit that ponders and seeks to inquire about the means to resolve disputes and exercise good judgment is going to be part of what cleanses and purges the daughters of Zion of their filth. A very, very positive thing. Essentially, the Word of God, knowing God, is what's going to purge them of their blood, of the blood and of the filth. And it is why we speak so vociferously, so boldly, so bluntly about man's lies, because they're bloody. And so that's half of it. You know, I was before I go to the second half, I'm rewriting yada yada now, and I'm in a chapter on where water is very prevalent in the early days of creation. And it's gratifying to learn that, of course, if you go back 15 years, scientists would tell you there was no water early on, so this whole thing is just utter nonsense. You know, water requires oxygen. Oxygen didn't come into being until it was created in first-generation stars in their core, and then had to be expelled to the point where it could meet with molecular hydrogen to create molecular water. Guess what? Not true. Oxygen existed during the Big Bang. The conditions of the Big Bang created water. Did not have to be created in the cores of stars, and that the prevalence of water was ubiquitous. It was everywhere, and that stars are born in clouds of water. These molecular clouds have water in it. The water, because it's such a heat sink, that cools the energy to the point that it can become a matter and is drawn in by gravity to create stars. And so water is all over there. So why am I taking this detour into water? Do you guys know what the Hebrew word for water is?
No.
Mayim.
Mayim. Mayim. I don't know.
Okay. Mayim. And the YM of mayim, what does that do? Makes a plural. Right? So it's just a mem, and then the yod mem makes it plural. So water is mem, yod mem. Is there another word that is essential to life that is three letters where the two on the ends are the same, so it reads the same right to left as it does left to right? With a yod in the middle of it?
And
how about
Haya? Haya and dod.
Haya.
Haya.
Dod.
Yeah.
DWD.
Yes.
But Haya is the most direct because it has the yod, the hand in the middle of it. Two people standing up, that's Yahweh's name, Haya. Mem is written exactly the same way. It's in Hebrew. It's Mem, the M, Yod, the hand, Mem. And since the
pretty
YM
cool
makes it plural, then what we're left with is the plural of Ma, which is an interrogatory. It's the plural of inquiry. It's the plural of pondering and of questioning, of inquiring about. So waters is really considering the sources of existence and life. Without water, there are no stars. Without water, there is no life. And so the very word means to ponder the source of existence, the source of life, the many forms of water. Now, one of the things that's interesting, too, is that water appears to be the only compound that has four states. Now, we always know about solid, liquid, and gas. And, of course, with water, the gaseous state is vastly more energetic, so much more powerful. All the things we can do with steam to power giant machines, steam is exceedingly powerful. Frozen water, water that is solid, water is the only molecular compound where it becomes less dense when it is solid, which is the only reason life exists on this planet, because water, ice floats, and if Christ did not float, if it went to, it sunk to the bottom and just continued to build from bottom up, we'd have no life on the planet. The oceans would be completely frozen. And so this water is this amazing thing. So it, we know that it has those three states, but water actually has a fourth state. And it's called tunneling, where all of the points of contact, you know, it's a water has is interesting because you have a negative and positive attraction between the oxygen and the hydrogen atom. Well, and the way that they align allows water to break apart and to form new water molecules. It's just and this tendency makes it this ultimate lubricant. It's the lubricant for life, which is why liquid water is necessary. But tunneling, the structure of the molecule all lines up as a fourth state of water. So it's a very interesting concept. But in this particular case, it is misfot. Misfot is a combination of to inquire about who, what, where, why, and when of making good decisions about the means to resolve disputes. And if you want to look at the means to resolve disputes, they are the mikra, another one of those ma kara.
Ma words.
Yeah, pondering the implications of the invitations to meet with God. And the mishpat are actually provided through those mikra. Now, Hebrew is not tough. If you just open your mind, you can't have it so open that your brains fall out, but you open your mind so that you're receptive, and you're willing to invest the time, it's amazing what you can learn.
In the ancient world, the sea was a place that's unknown. And, of course, as that it's anything that's unknown, of course, is a question. And the ma has the m-hey. So that would be also a word for water and referring to the sea. So it's, that's all related as well. Just I was just looking up things and it's going like, wow.
Yeah.
I never got so excited about water.
Yeah, water. I mean, water is a really fascinating subject. And Yahweh was proven right about how matter was conceived in these nurseries of water. We just, you know, we put up a probe here recently. Actually, it's a huge observatory, much, much larger than Hubble. And it was put up so that it could receive and analyze the wavelengths that liquid water emanates. And so it was put up to search for water because without water, there is no intelligent life. What is really the purpose of searching for all this unless we're searching for intelligent life? So it was made to search for water. And guess what it found? The scientists have been wrong all the time, that there was an abundance of water. So it's just an interesting affirmation. I think it's probably because Einstein was nothing compared to Moshe, that Moshe was the ultimate. No, I'm just kidding. That's scientist.
Yeah, source.
Okay, so
Moshe.
There is.
He knew how to say what Yahweh told him to say.
Yeah,
he saw the script,
and Yahweh knows it all.
Yes, there you go. That's probably okay. So that it isn't just the means to exercise good judgment that cleanse the lands of its filth and its blood. It was also the spirit of the ruach of Ka'ar, a blowing rage. Of being inflamed, of bristling wrath. Wow. What this means is that, and it's consistent. The first chapter of Yashayah is nothing but Ka'ar. God is just tongue lashing Israel for being political and religious. Just disgusted by their propensity to be religious. And now he's saying that I'm going to cleanse the world of with the spirit of blowing rage, of just being frustrated and disappointed, disgusted by what you have done. You know, God's disgust is going to turn out to be something purging, just like, you know, a fire consumes. There's going to be a fire that consumes this filth that we see here. It's a blowing rage. It's all the way through the Torah and the prophets. God is balanced. He's telling us this is good, this is bad. You know, if the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, good and bad, truth and lies. And so God is constantly sharing that with us. And if I may be so bold, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, the Torah, prophets, and Psalms.
Mm-hmm.
The Torah, prophets, and Psalms.
Because
there is as much of God exposing and condemning that which is evil and wrong as there is of God explaining what is good and right. Right? So you want to know the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? The Torah,
there
prophets,
it is.
And Psalms.
Yeah.
And what does it lead to?
Start with the two stones.
Leads to the
mitzvah.
Tree of life, doesn't it?
And the mikra.
And why is it called
mikra.
The tree of life? Because this life is part of Yahweh's covenant, empowered by his Torah teaching, is marvelous. Now, there's a reason that covenant members ought never be conspiratorial. Our lives are exciting. They're enriched. They're wonderful. We're not looking to blame someone for a miserable existence, because our existence is exuberant. It's enlightened. It's enriching. It's empowering. It's a book of lives. This life matters, because it's this life that determines whether or not we get to live in the next life. And it's what we do in this life that determines how many others get to join us.
Get to as well, yes.
The book of lives, or the tree of lives, and we find the tree of lives in the same place we find the tree of the knowledge of right and wrong. So the Torah, and the prophets, and the Psalms. So there we have it. Yeshayah 4:4. We'll share 4:5, and we'll pick this up again next week in the same place. But,
okay.
It's going to be pretty hard for us to outdo this realization that the tree of the knowledge of what is right and what is wrong is the Torah, the prophets, and the Psalms. And it's going to be pretty hard to go beyond the realization that the branch, Dot, is the best example of presenting what God despises and what he loves in the same song. Every one of his songs. You know how many times Christians poo-poo Dot by saying, God, he was always complaining. No, he wasn't. What he was doing is expressing his disgust for that which was wrong, and his love for that which was right. Dodes Mizmors. Yashayah, I mean, it has some of the most wonderful and soaring oratory, and also some of the most condemning statements you'll find in it. This is what matters to God. Both, he wants us to have the knowledge of both right and wrong, so that we can choose right. Then Yahweh will create, initiating something cutting edge upon every location and dwelling place along the ridgeline of Zion. And as over her mikra, by way of a cloud by day, along with smoke and with a brilliant shining radiance, majestic light of flaming fire at night. For indeed, upon all this manifestation of power and glory will be a sheltering canopy That doesn't sound like anything the world's ever experienced, does it?
Well,
that's where we're at.
No.
And no. And how do we get there? The ridgelines of Zion and via the Mikra.
Dode. And Dode were.
Yes. Yes. God's just said that's the path there. The signs posted along the way. You want to read what the signs posted along the way? Understand the relationship between Dode, David, his house at the bottom of that ridgeline, and the home of Yahweh at the top, and the connection between the two, the love they had for one another, a father and son, of each calling the other shepherd. And you find that it's that ridgeline, those signs, pointing to the Mikra and the meaning and purpose of every Mikra that causes something extraordinary to happen, something that we're going to witness that is unlike anything the world has ever seen, something brilliant, radiant, shining, a majestic light, flames of fire, as the manifestation and glory of the significance will be a sheltering canopy. You know, I do think that even part of the sheltering canopy is that Yahweh is going to want as much of himself as he can display
mm-hmm.
in our world, which at that point, I think Jerusalem and Israel are going to be beyond 3D. We know they're infinite now in time, so that makes them 4D. And they're going to be a living manifestation of Hebrew and light. We have light running through here, Hebrew words running through here, which are in fact immortal. They're not stuck in time, but liberated in time. I don't see any reason why this return to Eden isn't going to be 4, 5, or 6 dimensions, and that we're going to be able to go way beyond, perceive and navigate way beyond what we are currently able to perceive and enjoy and observe and understand, and that Yahweh is going to want as much of him as can possibly be in this realm, and so he's going to have a sheltering canopy so that he is a productive, positive force on it and doesn't, you know, just by his very presence.
Yeah. Annihilate everything.
Pretty powerful. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's that's where we'll start again. There's just so many insights that we can derive from that, so much we can ponder. But in essence, God's saying that if you're reading the signs posted along the way, Zion, and you're observing the Mikra, and you recognize the presence of Yahweh in these things, then you too will become brilliant and shining and radiant as light. So I think that is what we'll begin. So this is a call home of the remnant of the people and a celebration of their reconciliation and us all camping out together in a rather extraordinary and brilliant new world. I can't wait to see what it's all going to be like. It sounds so marvelous. And, you know, here is a guy who's telling us this story. Yeshayah, he was in heaven.
Right.
So he's seeing the seventh dimension. And yet he's using some pretty significant superlatives. He's pulled out every superlative in the Hebrew language to describe what he's witnessing.
Wow. Well, I can't wait for Yashi 4 or 5. Wow.
Yeah. So we'll dive into that next week. Thank you, JB, and thank you, Kirk. We'll have a wonderful Shabbat, and we'll be with you this time next week. May God bless you all. Good night.
Shabbat shalom.